Do you know that feeling when everyone is talking about a movie that you haven't seen? Have you ever felt compelled to make some vague comments just so you can join in the conversation? Well, what if you were in too deep? Do you think you could convince everyone that you'd seen it? Or do you think your version would be so much better that no one would care? Here at Faking Movies, we're always the ones who haven't seen the movie.
Anything you can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Welcome back to Tube and Throat Singing here with, with Zach and Lee and... God, Seth, you gotta stop, buddy.
I think we gotta take that one again.
Oh, yeah. No, it's good.
So we're gonna keep going?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, then, I guess this is Faking Movies.
We're getting further and further away from ever being a legitimate podcast.
I know.
Every day we step farther from God's grace.
Yeah, so that taste of world music can be found on our upcoming compilation album, yeah. The Sounds of Faking Movies.
Yeah.
It's mostly just Seth, like, blowing air out of his nose through instruments and stuff. But
weirdly, yes.
Do you want me to do that right now?
No, I don't. How are you guys doing tonight?
All right. I mean, I can.
Well, right, no. Here. You guys doing okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
11?
Well enough.
11.
All right, cool. Well, as you know... Oh, good. It's happening.
I'm done. I'm going to stop being annoying for this entire episode.
Well, let's not go that far. We need that.
That's part of the
job. We need the real Seth here. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As you know, Faking Movies is, of course, a show about cinematic blind spots. And usually, the cinematic blind spots that I bring to the table are a fucking chore for my co-hosts to get through. But it sounds like this week was not quite so much. You guys actually seemed, I don't know about excited, but not irritated to watch this movie.
It's been a weird stretch. We haven't had to shit on a movie in like 3 or 4 weeks, and it's a little uncomfortable, honestly. Like, it's not what I'm used to. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's odd. It'll be odd. We'll explain more when we get to the actual movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I look forward to hearing about that.
So, Lee, then what did we give you?
What did
you giving to you?
Yeah. Well, this time, you guys gave me Holes, starring Sigourney Weaver, John Voight, the Beef himself, Shia LaBeouf, Tim Blake Nelson, and Patricia Arquette. Stellar fucking cast. I got.
And there are a lot of actors we didn't give.
There were
also.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
So we'll talk about that.
One in particular, you're going to be very upset about, and I'm excited.
There's actually, I think there are two that you're going to be really upset
possibly.
About missing, but that's
possibly.
Fine.
Yeah.
This is okay. Well. I don't know how upset I will be because I know I was talking up a big game earlier today, but this might be out of all the movies I've done specifically, this is the one that I would actually want to watch. Like, this is
strong stance. Yeah.
I think we need to bust open the coffers and actually finance this. One. We need to make this one happen.
Our bone dry coffers.
Yeah, well, maybe some enterprising listener will pay for it.
Yeah, looking at you, Liz, too.
What was Bull Durham nephew guy? Maybe he knows somebody.
Oh, yeah. Ben Shelton.
Yeah, that guy.
We got Liz 2 as the producer. Ben Shelton's going to direct because, none of us know how to do that. But
just sell a crown jewel. Just one. When we'll fucking knock this out. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And we're going to park our trailers on top of Vincent Gallo's body.
With any luck, yes.
Ugh. Piece of trash. Anyway, without further ado, I guess.
Your version of Holes.
I'll get into Holes. Okay. So... my story opens on an interrogation. John Voight, think space German. He's clearly...
That's not hard.
Yeah. He's clearly a bad guy, and he's interrogating Tim Blake Nelson, and he says to him, your story. I think it has many holes. So Tim swears up and down that what he's been telling him is the truth, but John won't believe him.
And he's all kind of flustered in the way that Tim Blake Nelson always is.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. John doesn't believe that he's telling the truth, and he then produces some sort of, like, futuristic-looking torture drill, and he says to him, "Yes, your story is full of holes, but I believe that in due time you will answer my question truthfully. Now I shall ask again, where's the beef?"
Well, if it's a torture drill, then you missed another holes goof. But
I wanted to leave that one to the to the imagination. Okay. That one's a suggestion of holes.
It's not as good as the where's the beef goof for sure.
Yeah. So we do. Yeah. By the way, this whole idea sprung from us calling Shia LaBeouf the beef and me remembering a commercial from the 80s. So
this is another an actor plays a character by their own name kind of situation that we do all the time.
There's a lot of my whole movie hinges on that. Perfect. For a lot of different people. So
love it. This already sounds like a mess.
So you know, as the torture begins and we get like a wipe and the screen goes to black and we can hear Tim's screams. And as we reorient ourselves, we can see that now we're looking up at a night sky. Mm-hmm, and this is when we meet Shia, the beef.
Yes.
The beef is being very petulant, as you can imagine. think of him like Luke Skywalker. If Luke Skywalker only said, "Tashi Station," over and over and over again for the whole movie.
He's gonna go to the Tashi Station with my friends.
Pick up some power converters. Yeah. So he's being very petulant, and we also see that he's being trained by Patricia Arquette. We're gonna come to know her as the medium.
If you guys
remember Mom Shows, she played the medium on Medium.
Did she? No.
She super did. She won an Emmy for it.
Oh, fuck. I'm thinking of the one with the British guy where he was... The Mentalist. Oh, so close.
Yeah, you're thinking of The Mentalist, yeah.
Okay.
You guys watched too much CBS, I think.
The Medium only moved to CBS for its final season. It was on NBC for the rest of its run.
Excuse me.
As if you could make an embarrassing thing more embarrassing.
So anyway, Patricia Arquette is the medium, and she's training the beef. And he thinks that he's ready, but she knows better. He's training to meet Sigourney Weaver, whose character is going to be known as the Dream Weaver.
Hang on, you're describing Star Wars. This is just Star Wars.
Hold on.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not exactly like Star
this
Wars.
This movie has already been made.
Yes. Guys, it's the hero with a thousand faces.
All right, so you'll call her Dreamweaver, we'll call her Yoda, that's fine, whatever you want to do.
Just let it go. Just let it wash over you.
Okay.
You're not going to get hooked on the story.
Oh, no, I'm already hooked.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah. But he's training to meet Sigourney, the Dreamweaver. She's a powerful being who's holding off the onslaught of John Voight's evil forces. And through this scene, we learn that the beef is training because he's the missing piece that's going to allow her to vanquish John Voight and his forces from the universe. And that's why, John Voight is looking for him, because it's easier to destroy the tool than to actually kill a god, so to speak.
Yeah. John Voight, was he horribly maimed in some sort of accident and dresses in black now, or is that just
No, he just dresses like a Nazi, space Nazi. We're not doing...
Oh, well,
he's not
that
in...
still kind of works, honestly.
Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. Maybe his left hand is robotic.
Could be. Yeah.
We can explore that in future installments.
Oh, okay.
Maybe seven or eight of them.
You think this is going to be a franchise?
When have we ever made a movie that wasn't meant to be a franchise?
Gotta cash in.
Yeah.
Okay, so we get this exposition about the beef and his training and all this, and then spaceships appear in the sky, and the beef and the medium have to make a hasty escape, and we get this really good space battle scene where the wily heroes are just barely escaping. We also see that a horribly injured Tim Blake Nelson is on the command ship of John Voight, which just shows us that he did eventually answer the question, where's the beef?
Okay.
As the movie goes on, we get a lot of scenes of John Voight chewing scenery and just being evil. I don't think that I want to give him, like, a real motivation. It's just going to be a sci-fi villain who's evil because he wants to take over the universe.
Sure, naturally.
Yeah. We're also going to have a lot of scenes where there's encounters with aliens, and it's just a lot of, like, sci-fi fun. they're shut up.
I know it's Star Wars. What the fuck is happening?
It's about to not be Star Wars, okay?
If there's a really fat, green one that lives on a desert planet, I swear to God. I swear to God, Lee, you're going to get a 10 because I really like Star Wars.
Okay. It's not Star Wars. Just let me keep going.
Okay.
I do not believe you, but yes, please.
Okay. So, you know, they're building up their team and they're escaping the bad guys. It's just a lot of fun stuff, you know.
Are there two robots?
Throughout.
A gay one and a little one?
So, well, you guys are going to really love this next thing I say, then.
Wonderful.
So, throughout this, like, at this point, the beef is playing, like, the de facto mentee protege type character.
Uh-huh.
And we're supposed to associate with him, even though it's Shia LaBeouf, so he's a real raging douchebag, and he's just sure, awful. Sure. And the medium, Patricia Arquette, is the mentor, protector. She's the actual cool character that eventually will be the breakout star of the movie.
Okay.
Twist. So
this is all interspersed with scenes of the Dreamweaver sitting in, like, a weird ethereal realm. I know Seth has seen this movie. You probably haven't, Zach, but if you've ever seen, for our audience, the movie, the 79 Italian horror movie, The Visitor, there's this really...
It's super fun and insane.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, there's this really vivid opening scene where it's like this empty void on, like, this salt flat plain with crazy, like, I don't know if it's snow or what the fuck, but it's this very, like, visually appealing kind of void.
Okay.
And that's where we keep seeing the Dreamweaver.
Keep flashing to that.
Yes. And whenever we flash to the Dreamweaver, we can see that she's speaking to a character that is off screen.
Mm-hmm.
And she's passing on knowledge of how to defeat evil forces. We also, throughout the movie, get a lot of shots of the beef meditating. So, you know, the implication is that they're training on some sort of psychic plane. So eventually we get to the, after all the, like, adventure shit, we get to the big climax and we finally are in the Dreamweaver's realm. And all of our main characters are here. And John Voight is about to kill the beef, but he's, like, doing his vamp shit. He's playing he's doing his crazy villain scenery chew.
Naturally.
He's talking
like
about
a weird, horseshoe-shaped spacecraft just kind of shows up and...
No.
I think the only one we haven't covered is Han and Chewbacca yet, but sure they'll show up at some point.
Yeah.
Okay. So, he's about to kill the beef, and he's vamping. He's talking about how he outsmarted the Dreamweaver. Like, he's actually bragging, like, I know that I could never kill you. I know that you're stronger than me. So I'm going to kill this stupid kid.
Okay.
Good.
The person that you need to kill me. But then we get the actual reveal. And the Dreamweaver tells everyone. She kind of just laughs. She's like, the beef was never my student. She just implanted that idea into the minds of John Voight and Tim Blake Nelson and even the beef himself. They all thought that he was her student and he never was.
I see.
Everything played out exactly as she planned.
Oh, what the
fuck? And the realm that they're in right now is just an extension of the universe that she actually lives in. She's not even there. Yeah,
okay.
She can appear to them, but she can't ever interact with them. She needs someone who can cross between universes. Then we see the dream, those training dream sequences again, and we finally, the camera finally moves, and we see that it was the medium who was being trained the whole time. Because the medium has the ability to exist in any type of space and move between the holes in reality.
There's our holes.
So just then, the medium grabs John Voight, and together they cross into the actual physical version of the Dreamweaver's realm. And yeah, once we're there, we see that the place, the realm that she actually exists in, the one that we've been seeing through all these dream sequences and even in the last, you know, stage setup, that was nothing compared to where she actually lives. This is like fucking mind-blowing Jack Kirby cosmic fucking comic book shit. Like, it's insane. And once she's, once they're all there, John Voight's ready to, like, he pulls out his space gun or whatever, and then, you know, the Dreamweaver just puts her hand up and blinks him out of existence. Yeah, there's no big fight. He just becomes an afterthought in her universe. So once this happens, we see the Beef and Tim Blake Nelson back in their universe, and we find out that the Dreamweaver set this all up with the intent of those two taking over John Voight's evil forces. And when they ask her how they're going to accomplish this, she says something like, it's simple. They'll all believe that they've been your forces this whole time. I am the Dreamweaver, after all. So she's going to implant that into their minds. So then we get this, like, tearful goodbye across the universal realms between the medium and all of her friends, because for some poorly defined reason that I'm sure will overcome in one of the sequels, she can't return. She's stuck in the Dreamweaver's realm.
But she might come back as, like, some kind of ghost of force?
Like a weird hologram or something.
Yeah, some kinda... maybe something like that.
Only in the remasters ghost. 20 years from now,
And, well, and then after, when the credits are over, I'm going to just keep pushing through this. When the
credits... that's the right call,
When we get to the post-credits, we get a tease of, like, whoever the new villain's going to be for the next movie. And then at some point prior to the final installment, Voight will come back and he'll have cosmic powers or some shit. And that's when the medium probably shows up and they do battle in eternity or some bullshit like that. But basically, that's Holes. I wanted to make a sci-fi movie that has all the, like, normal crazy fun sci-fi shit, but ends in, like, a really small scale way. Because it's something it's something that I see that, like, it happens a lot in sci-fi literature, but I never see it in the movies. And I don't know if I'm just watching the wrong movies, but it was something I wanted to see.
Yeah, despite the one we were just talking about, you pretty much mirrored a sci-fi movie that is not the one we were just talking about. And I'm not going to mention which one right now. For future reference, but
I do like now I'm not sure if are all sci-fi movies Star Wars, maybe, I don't know, possibly.
all heroes' journey stories are Star Wars, because George Lucas fucking had Joseph Campbell on speed dial asking if he was doing it right.
I mean, my favorite sci-fi movie, of which you are all familiar, is not a hero's journey, unless you consider a whale.
Well, I mean...
I mean, a whale could be a hero, Seth. No. What's,
why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
That's true.
I do like this, so you've left it open for the infinite possibilities. Like, with this, like, nothing is real, it's all fake universes, or is it? Like, there's just, you can do anything with that. That's so good.
Yeah, like, the Dreamweaver character could eventually become evil. Like, if it has the power to manipulate our reality and just needs a medium to do so.
It means you don't really have to worry about canon very much, which is nice.
Oh, yeah, you can just overwrite anything you want.
It allows you to do whatever kind of interesting... It's a good way to start a franchise, you're right.
Okay.
So, you see, it wasn't Star Wars, assholes.
I mean, I've had some similarities, shall we say.
Okay, real holes. Fade in. There's a Jawa and Tusken Raider.
Oh, damn it, you beat me to it.
Yep.
Seth, you want to do the IMDb?
Yeah, I got it right here.
All
right. Holes, 2003.
Which I did not realize. I thought it was way earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, so did I, oddly. Yeah. Anyway, a wrongfully convicted boy is sent to a brutal desert detention camp where he joins the job of digging holes for some mysterious reason.
That's about as far away from what I did as you could
get. Yeah, for sure. One of the more accurate synopses I think we've had recently.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is the premise of the film.
Yes.
So the actors we didn't give you that I think you would be excited about is Henry Winkler is in this.
Ooh.
Yep. He's great in it. Super good. Yeah.
And
when isn't he?
True. And Dulé Hill.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. quick aside. I was reading about this. There is a Psych episode where there's like a hole in it at some point. And James Rodet.
Is it the paleontology episode?
Very possibly, yes.
Because they dig a shitload of holes in that episode.
Okay, well then definitely yes, yeah. And James Rodet walks up and he goes, "Ah, this is like that movie with Sigourney Weaver." And then Dulé Hill apparently spends the entire episode guessing movies that aren't holes, which is like a secret move, which I thought was very fun. Yeah.
That God, is pretty great.
Yeah.
Guys, just, you know, sidebar here, Psych Chat,
so good.
I love Psych.
It's so good.
Good.
I never watched it.
Oh my God, you should. It's wonderful.
Oh, it's all over. It's all over Prime right now. You got to
check
that out.
I think that it came out like maybe one of the times when I was living out of the country and then I just never got into it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also looks very stupid on the surface and it was like a USA show, I think. So, yeah, it seems very bad, but it's very good. Yeah.
Oh, such a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a shot. So, how do we want to do this synopsis?
It is tough. I guess, well, I'll preface and maybe we can just get through it. There are sort of dual plot lines in this movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is a split time situation and it comes together at the end.
Yeah.
So
one timeline moves at one speed and another one moves at a different speed?
No, one is
more like one is oldie timey and one is contemporaneous.
Okay.
And so the beef, I guess I should say this now. So Shia LaBeouf, baby beef in this movie, let's call him Veal. Should we call him Veal, perhaps?
Yeah.
Is
so fucking good. I love you.
Yeah, the veal was filming Even Stevens at the same time.
He was doing double duties. He was doing like 8-hour days on Even Stevens and then nights on fucking Holes.
Hey guys, can we sidebar real quick? I loved Even Stevens. Show that was.
Hell yeah.
It had one of the Romano clan in it. Oh my God.
My cousin Christy Carlson Romano.
Hey, oh my God,
Deborah! I'm related to her.
I have here.
I don't know that they're related. I don't know if they are or not.
I believe. I think it's his daughter, actually.
What?
I don't
Holy
know about
shit! I didn't know
daughter.
That.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm probably just making things up.
Either way,
she's in one of the Cutting Edge sequels.
She is. Yeah. The oft forgotten Cutting Edge sequels.
The ones that D.B. Sweeney came back for, but not Moira Kelly.
Yeah, surprise, surprise.
You guys watch too much Disney Channel, I feel.
Too many skating movies? It's unclear.
Yeah.
I wrote, like, before I even watched this movie, I unironically like old beef, like Veal era and like pre-beef. Like, it's he's very good before he went fully insane. Like,
I mean, Steven Spielberg plucked him out of, well, fame. I mean, he was still famous, but he was like, here's the kid I want to work with.
Yeah.
This kid's got talent. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, Eagle Eye and all that shit, Even Stevens is very good. Transformers, like, early Transformers, fucking really good. I read...
Let's not go crazy.
Yeah.
I like them. I don't know.
No.
I read the director said initially he was looking for, quote, a young Tom Hanks. And mm-hmm. I think he really does that in this movie.
Yeah.
Like, he's very charming.
I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other people, I have it written down here somewhere. I think the other people he was they were considering for this role were Frankie Muniz.
Naturally. Yeah.
I don't know. And the kid.
I think it could have worked.
Maybe. He was at the right, like, age at that point, I guess. But he's mm-hmm. not as, like goofy charming as the
I don't
deal.
Think... And Frankie's great. And, I mean, hey, guys, sidebar real quick. I love Malcolm with the
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a great show.
No, I think we've talked about that on the show before, how yeah, much we like it.
It's very good, yeah.
I don't know that he has the same kind of chops as Veal did.
Definitely
yeah,
not...
That's true.
Not... I mean, they had about the same experience at this point, but he doesn't have the same feel by any means.
Yeah. Veal chops.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not as tender, if you will. And then the kid from...
This is going to get overbearing.
Yeah, it really
bit,
is.
The kid from Home Alone 3, and that was the best credit I could find from him, was the
I don't even
choice.
Know who that was.
Yeah, so. Not important.
What's the name? Do you got a name on that?
No,
kid?
It was a three-namer. It was like Ryan something something. I don't know. Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Veal was
not,
the
not, unlike
choice.
Veal.
Yeah.
Veal is very
yeah, Veal is,
tough.
Yeah, Veal
all.
Is the right
it's
choice.
Tender.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. All right, I don't know, Seth, you want to give it a shot with the synopsis and the nightmares?
Yeah, I can do that.
All right.
So we start off with Veal Chop on a bus. Well, no, he like finds some shoes, and then some cops think that he stole these shoes because these shoes belong to a famous athlete.
Notably, okay, we should bring this
that's
up.
That's weird.
In a famous baseball player, technically, this is a third baseball movie. We did it.
Oh, we did it.
Yay!
It's true.
Yeah.
Wait, what was the first baseball movie?
Oh, I don't know. I thought there were three. Maybe not.
I don't
We were goofing about
know.
That last episode. I don't know. Yeah. Well, the baseball player is Rick Fox, if that makes any difference. Probably not.
Isn't know. Rick Fox a basketball player? He played for the Lakers.
I thought he was an actor. Married to Elijah Dushku. Maybe he is a basketball player. All right, we'll cut all this out. No big
this
deal.
This is good pod.
Yeah. Woof.
I mean, Rick Fox did become an actor when he...
Oh, then yeah, maybe
this
he
is not
was
important.
Also about, yeah,
let's
sure
talk right. more about cuts of meat. Come on, yeah. movie and meat.
Okay,
let's do it. Yeah.
Well, the real brisket of this situation oh, is that...
Seamless cut.
You dirty bird.
Seamless.
You dirty bird.
Anyway, the Veal Chops, like the police catch him because he has these shoes for some reason, and take him back to his parents' house where he find that his father, Henry Winkler, is...
Nice.
That's
a good choice.
Obsessed with trying to solve the
Zodiac killer.
Well, I mean, he already knew that Ted Cruz is the Zodiac killer at this point.
He checked that one off and then...
Yeah, like everybody, I feel like everybody in their heart of hearts knows. Yeah.
Even 2003, yeah. he was like...
Yeah, even 2003
future,
before he was...
Future candidate
yeah.
said Ted Cruz is definitely the Zodiac.
Yeah, yeah like no doubt, no doubt. Henry Winkler is obsessed with the greatest problem plaguing modern times, mm-hmm. and that is foot odor.
Yeah. A literal mad scientist. Yep.
Yeah, but he's...
So a regular candidate for an ignoble
mm-hmm. prize. Yeah, that
sure,
sort of thing.
Sure.
Yes, for sure. Yep. He, like, I mean, this is like a young, like a young teens movie. Like, it's aimed at
yeah,
at, like,
some regular YA shit. So
yeah,
when did the Hunger Games start?
Yeah, it was
yeah.
like before Hunger Games. I don't think they made movies was, like this back then.
Yeah, I can't think of, in like 2003, I can think of very few other movies that have the same sort of feel and
yeah.
audience focus.
Right, it was, back then it was either like straight up child kids movie or like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, teen movie. But yeah, this is
yeah.
like the in between. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean...
So you're saying that this is not another teen movie?
No.
God damn it.
Actively, no. Okay. Let me...
We
let
can
me
do
go.
It. We can do it. We can
okay.
Do it.
Ugh, it's tough. Anyway, I think So at this point,
I have an actual question.
Okay.
Is this storyline in contemporary yes. times, or is this the past one?
This is the contemporary one.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we have some flashbacks, and Baby Beef is like, oh, my family has a curse. We're always unlucky. And that's an important point. Anyway, he goes to trial, apparently, and the judge is clearly on the take of the evil work camp. Because there's no reason that he should be sending all of these children to a work camp.
Not to interrupt, but this is my three-word summary, and it is kids for cash. Whoops.
Oh, boy. Yeah. That hits a little close.
A little too close to Lee's still mysterious hometown. Probably not anymore.
Yeah, that one's a pretty big hint. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they straight send him up the river, and it's not good. Yeah.
Yeah. So he ends up at this labor camp in the middle of a dry lake that is run by seemingly John Voight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like John Voight is there, and what's his bucket, that other dude whose name I can't
remember. Tim Blake Nelson.
Three names. Tim Blake Nelson, yeah. Yeah. And a bunch of other children. And so they're told that they have to dig these holes in the desert, and if they find anything interesting, they get a day off. It's never defined what interesting thing is until
right. It's a moving
later.
Target. Yeah,
but on purpose, if they find something interesting, then the warden will come out, who is not John Voight, but is in fact Sigourney Weaver.
Sure,
and will assess everything and maybe give a person a day off.
Yep.
So there's all kinds of, you know, interpersonal conflicts with, you know, Baby Beef is the new guy. Let's fight with him or whatever.
Normal prison shit, yeah.
And he, Baby Beef particularly befriends Kilo Thomas, who is Hector Zero Zeroni.
Very charming in this, yeah.
Yeah, who is mostly mute. He doesn't really talk, but he is very good at digging holes. And so they form sort of a friendship. We get a flashback here to the origins of the family curse, where Veal Chop's great-great-grandpappy in Latvia or whatever made a deal with a crazy old gypsy question mark
yeah
I mean it's a woman played by some kind of mystic played by Eartha Kitt, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Ooh.
another like,
maybe it's
weird
the same character
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe she's playing the same character as the one she plays in Ernest Scares Stupid.
I was gonna say what's his three names looks a lot like Ernest, like they could Jim Varney and the guy. Yeah.
Mm.
I don't know.
Love Jim Varney.
Yeah, he's the best.
The curse is essentially that Baby Beef's great 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 whatever did not repay a debt to Eartha Kitt, and therefore she cursed his family for sons of sons sort of thing.
Sure.
Yep.
This lady was called Madame Zeroni though, so it's already kind of telegraphing everything that's going to transpire.
Yeah.
At this point, because the Beef's best friend is also named Zeroni.
Right.
Kids movie. Yeah.
So, oh god. Now we get into some of the other timeline, right?
Yeah.
Somewhere in here.
It's weirdly complicated for a kids movie.
Yeah. And in this timeline,
Shane Carruth directed this movie.
Might as well, yeah.
We have Patricia Arquette as like a school marm sort of situation.
Forgot about her.
Yeah.
And
she's kind of main character in my movie, and I totally forgot about her.
She's the main character in this one, but late.
She's the main character in half of this movie.
Well, same with Sigourney. We were talking today. Sigourney shows up at minute 40.
40
in
minutes.
This movie?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. So she like runs the schoolhouse and everything, and Dule Hill is back also in oldie western-y time. This takes place in Texas also, by the way.
And Dule Hill
is
notably a black man.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that play into the movie at all?
Yeah,
I'm guessing
it does.
You brought it up in that very awkward way because of that. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like a traveling salesman that specializes in onions.
Yep.
Seth, when the episode's over, you know I'm going to ask you to do the onion rant, right?
Wait, which onion rant?
From The Simpsons.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one. I do like that.
Okay. We can cut this out, too.
Yeah,
yep. Sure. Yep. There's going to be lots of cuts this week.
Yeah.
Good luck, Zach.
Yeah.
Well, make Zach work for his money.
Yeah, yeah. I'll see you in hell.
Still waiting on those checks.
So, Dule Hill is like a traveling salesman that, for instance, makes a tonic that keeps away these indigenous lizards that are really that just like murder everything. The yellow spotted lizards that just like somebody, if you get bit by a yellow spotted lizard, you just die, and that's true in both timelines.
Yep.
But he has a tonic that can get rid of it. Anyway. He ends up being kind of a fix-it man, and he and Patricia Arquette get closer and closer, and then just, like, this is all interspersed into the other timeline, but the net result is that he ends up being lynched. which, ooh. Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah, which is, like, a real dark... dark turn there.
Yeah, there was a lot of like heavy for a YA or a kids movie kind of stuff in this.
He ends up being lynched, and then Patricia Arquette starts going on a super murder spree.
Yeah.
Murder.
What?
Yeah.
Yep.
A murder and crime spree, and like is just destroying. So Dule Hill is lynched by the mayor of the town, who also has affection for Patricia Arquette. I forgot to mention that.
Mm-hmm.
And so she is a real shithead, yeah.
As a real shithead. So now she is going to destroy everything that man held dear.
Yep.
Because he destroyed everything that she held dear.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and he burned down her schoolhouse too.
Like, yeah. Real dick.
He like burns down the schoolhouse and then kills Dule Hill.
Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, Dule Hill is a man worth dying for.
I mean,
so.
Yeah.
But she's definitely a hero in this movie. She goes full like drag me to hell. Like I'm just gonna fucking rob banks and murder everybody and fuck all this.
Yeah, which is pretty. Yeah. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
But God, now where are we?
I feel like this might be a fitting time to mention this movie is long as tits.
It is 2 full hours long. Which...
Yeah. Oh, good. We keep our tradition of never letting Zach watch a short
ever,
movie.
Though. Ever, 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 ever.
Yeah.
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 Well, so this is like, by this point, they haven't put the mystery together that they're sort of related, but like, so the Patricia Arquette character eventually has like a treasure that she like hides, and that comes in later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this why they're digging the hole?
This is why they're digging the holes. Yeah.
Yeah. So like up front, Sigourney Weaver is the great granddaughter of the horrible mayor.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
And okay. And so it's just been this kind of family thing where they're all obsessed with this treasure forever, and she's the most recent inheritor of that obsession.
Yeah.
And so she runs this horrible boys' camp.
Yeah.
Where she forces the children. And so, like, at one point, somebody finds the lipstick case from Patricia Arquette, because her like, main... Okay.
Well, just...
Lee just shifted his camera so it's on a kitty cat instead of on his face, which, all right.
Oh,
she's a very good kitty cat.
It's gonna take me fucking 4 hours to edit this shit.
Wait, guys, wait. Just real quick.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought she was gonna make a louder noise than that.
No.
Oh, beans.
Anyway, Patricia Arquette was known as Catherine Kissin' Kate Barlow because after she murdered somebody, she would kiss them and leave like big lipstick marks.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, okay. Baby Beef, whose name is now Caveman, by the way,
yeah.
for some reason.
Yeah.
Is that the nickname he got at the hole digging school or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, he's still there, and he's like teaching Zero, Kilo Thomas, how to read and stuff like that, and they're like,
"Oh, so is this repaying his family's debt?"
Well, he doesn't know that. First off, he doesn't
well,
know
right,
that
right,
it's a thing, but
it's mostly giving him humanity. Like, everybody else is all like a bully, and him and Zero, the kid, are like the only two that are actually like reasonable humans, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And God, there's more drama, but eventually, like, Zero hits one of the counselors in the face with a shovel and runs away.
Yep.
And
Ernest.
A short time thereafter, the Beef also ends up running away by trying to steal a truck.
Yep.
And then they find each other, and God, I forgot about stupid the Beef's like great grandfather that hid away at a goddamn cave in the middle of a mountain, and that's what saves
matter.
Their lives.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a complicated movie.
It
dude.
Is wicked complicated. Yeah,
I am just for the listener at home, you can't see just the torment going on in Seth's
face
right now.
Seth is having
right
a real
now.
Rough
like,
time
is,
with this. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so goddamn like it makes so much sense in a linear sense when you're watching the movie,
yeah,
but man,
that's true.
To describe it to another person is impossible.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe we'll just get to the end
where
we find out that to relieve the curse, the Beef carries Zero up the mountain and saves his life because they find this onion patch, which was Dule Hill's onion patch.
Oh, he got bit by the thing.
Yeah.
And
they were stranded in the desert and or in the dry lake. So yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And they eventually go and find the actual treasure, which the Beef had already pretty much found before he ran away.
Yep.
And then, you know, suddenly the curse is lifted, and that means that Henry Winkler discovers his magic serum for saving, or for removing foot odor from everything.
For saving shoes the world round, yes.
I mean, we laugh at that, but if someone came up with
my God.
They would make some fucking
money. It turns out
yeah.
that the secret ingredient is a peaches
onions.
And onions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Surprise.
Patricia Arquette's character notably always had peaches around her.
Yeah.
So it was the combination of Patricia Arquette and Dule Hill that really solved all of this.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what I wouldn't want to eat with a peach? An onion.
Everybody is just eating onions like they're
I would
apples.
Say, yeah, exclusively. They chomp into onions and they sort of make up for it. They go like, oh, these are the sweetest onions ever. But like, no, still onions. Still onions. Well, so, and eventually all the counselor folks or the prison guards get their comeuppance. They start to.
Yeah, so John Voight's kind of just like. Generic bad guy in it. He's not like a main bad guy or
well
anything.
That's an interesting one, Seth. We talked about this. Do you want to talk about that?
Wait, which part now? I'm so
John Voight's
right
like weird subplot that doesn't get redeemed.
Oh,
in
yeah all right, so he's getting arrested and one of the cops recognizes him and he's like Marion whatever your name is. And all the kids start making fun of him and are like, Marion,
that's a girl's name.
Yeah, and he's like, that's right, it ain't a girl's name, or it ain't a man's name.
Yeah,
and
that's it.
And then it's just dropped. It's just that line.
It's a really weird
little
addition to not elaborate
it
on.
Made
sense.
Yeah.
It was so frustrating and confusing, but in general, though.
Well, so, some lawyer when the curse is broken, some lawyer figures out that the veal shouldn't really be there, and so they come up and they're like, "Oh, this is a kids for cash thing." Mm-hmm. So they arrest all them folks, and then Beef and Zero get to keep the treasure, and they split it, and it's worth like $1 trillion or some shit, and it's a happy ending. Yeah,
yeah,
that's kind of the whole thing.
And that's good.
Yeah,
that's
all those pro bono lawyers working on petty theft cases. Right? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, his father was suddenly a successful inventor, and so that's true. Think they hired her on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
yeah. That would make sense. Oh, yeah.
it's a weird, complicated movie.
It is. It is.
It's real good though.
Like, yeah, I was gonna say we struggled to describe it, but like the construction of this movie with the parallel plots and everything is actually very compelling. Like and they intersperse them at exactly the right rate and everything. Like it was very, very compelling.
I have two. Well, I have a 4-word summary and a 3-word summary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Bring them on.
And the 4-word is magic old timey onions, which is the most important part of this.
Mm-hmm. They do play heavily, weirdly. Yeah. Yeah.
And then the 3-word is the beef likable.
Yeah.
Which is
well, okay. Could give me some artistic license here.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we could rephrase that as beef well done.
Oh, ooh. You son of a bitch.
Oh boy. this episode is real rough in terms of
beef pun
everything.
No, like this was in his charming phase as we discussed. Good. Yeah.
The early days.
Yep, yep.
So what kind of stuff you got, Zach?
I feel like I covered most of it. I tried to do a Lee and look up like interesting background on this movie, and there was nothing of note, except for the only thing that I found that I thought Lee might appreciate was this was released on friend of Lee's, Rick Moranis's, 50th birthday. Notably, he had nothing to do with this movie.
Why is that important?
Why is that important? It was in the IMDb facts. That's all. Someone found that notable. That's all I got.
I do love Rick Moranis. I like that you were looking for background information that I would find interesting, because that's exactly what I do when I'm looking for background information.
Well,
I'm looking for stuff that I find interesting. I don't care about you guys.
Well, like generally you find some like pretty interesting shit, and there was like all of the facts on this, and was like the license plate on the Cadillac that Sigourney Weaver drives happens to be the part number for the like hammer in a CZ pistol or some crazy shit. I was like none of it made any goddamn sense. Yeah,
that's what we call in the business a coincidence.
It was all pretty silly. Yeah, so I think that's all I got. Seth, you got anything else? I don't know.
I mean, the only things that I had was like, I think that all of the child actors did a really good job.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they were all forced into this shitty situation. All of our delinquent children. And
yeah, spending time with John Voight.
And they did a really good job of, and I don't know if you guys had the same experience as me, but like when you were a kid and you had like friends that you also really hated, but like
they were part of your friend group.
There's like there's always like a bully, but he's still your friend, and like there's like controlling guys, and like, so I think they did a really good job of that like true to life experience that you kind of are forced to have when you're forced to hang out with other children your age.
Absolutely.
I thought they did a really good job with that.
They did.
Every town has a Remo. That's all
I'll say about that. I think, notably, the other thing that I thought was weird, I was looking up some of those dudes, and they have done very little past this movie.
But they all were very competent.
They were good, yeah.
As much as I hate most children on film, I think they all did a pretty good job.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and then at the end, when the, you know, the child services frees everybody.
Yeah.
Like, most of the children that were at this camp were actually delinquents. Like, so yeah.
They didn't cover that very well. Yeah, our two heroes were like, well, I guess even Zero, like, did steal a thing. He stole the shoes, ultimately, which is one of the reveals.
He's the reason that the beef got.
But he's ultimate pure good. Like, he was the best kid ever and just meant well.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But yeah, all the other ones were like actual shitty kids, which is interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't understand how that worked out, but in general, it was we probably ought to just get to ratings then, because I don't really have any.
Sounds like
any
stuff.
Yep.
Let's hear what you guys think of my
Star Wars,
my space epic.
My
multi-dimensional universe hopping space epic.
Well, let's start with IMDb. This is tied with Bull Durham at a whopping 7.1.
Okay.
65,000 votes.
That's a lot of votes.
Yeah. And 7.1 for, well, I guess, I mean, there's kids movies. Like, Coco's like number 20 now or something. But like, that's like not bad for an older kids movie, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also,
sure.
Financially, this cost $20 million to make, which seemed low given the incredible cast.
Amount of holes that they had.
And
Zach, they probably just dug one or two holes and kept filming.
It was six or seven?
It was, there were seven kids, so there were seven holes. But I did read, so they had to have holes at different levels of dugness. And so they had like separate views in the desert that they were in California, where they would just pan around based on the stage of digging that they were at for each scene.
Oh, they just did it from a different angle.
But yeah, so cost $20 million, which seems entirely cheap.
Believe there were 14 lizards on set.
There were. They painted them. They painted them.
Yeah, with yellow spots. three of them were featured, and the other 11 were quote background lizards.
If Seth would know anything about a movie, it would be the lizard wrangling
that happened. Yeah. But it made $71 million, which is like pretty good. Like that's
a
good return. All right, so. For actual holes, honestly, 7.1 seems pretty good. I might even go like 7.5. I very much enjoyed this movie. It holds up for even adult times. It was very long, but I think it did not really drag that much. So Lee's, I really liked A New Hope and parts of Empire, so I'm gonna go like. I want to go 10 on it, but I don't know.
Seems a bit much. All right.
Throwing off our ratings metric here.
Yeah. No. Well, we talked about how all sci-fi is a single thing, I guess. But I like your sort of anything can happen at any time and lots of twists. Like, that was very fun. Sci-fi in general is very good. Like,
I'm sorry. It's like I'm listening to a campaign speech. Like, sci-fi as well is very good.
Just not
good.
Committing to anything? No, I don't think we do that much sci-fi. Or, I don't know. I'll go an 8. I'll give Lee the win on that one.
Okay.
That was good.
Well, thank you.
Fun.
That was very nice.
Seth, what do you think?
If I add two robots, will that...
If one is gold and gay and the other one is tiny and blue, then yes, of course.
It's not necessarily gay.
There's a lot of, I think, evidence to back that
also,
up.
Also, one of his arms is red.
Well, now.
Well, yeah.
Although they got rid of that for the... Anyway, this is unusable. Yeah.
Oh, the editing. All right. Seth, what do you think?
We already have a whole YouTube video about the colors of C-3PO's arms.
That's true. It's Christ. Very important. Go to our YouTubes, everybody.
Yeah.
I update that still.
Wink. Yeah, so for Lise, I will also say, like, I like the second half of it, where we get more into the, like, the less traditional sort of, and the more, like, complex world building mm-hmm. is something that I really appreciate.
Mm-hmm. Listen, guys, I know you gave me a lot of shit. I had to set my universe up.
No. I mean, it is the first act of a apparently 15-act play. What?
I guess I'm gonna fuck myself here because, like the first Star Wars movie,
what?
It works. Huh. It works as a self-contained story and as an open-ended adventure.
Which is just, sure. That's good movie making. That's, mm-hmm, yeah, that's mm-hmm, business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm, that's good movies.
That's good movies. Yeah,
is that
so,
our new catchphrase?
that's good movies? I hope not. That's terrible. It's a really stupid thing. So Lee, I'm gonna give you a 7.3.
Yay, I won. Okay. Oh, I won.
What? I haven't.
Well, he didn't rate the
Fuck. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
God,
so just for that, Holes gets a 10.
Holes gets a 15. Fuck you.
No, Holes is pretty good.
no, but really, it's pretty good.
the original, I think that I mirror Zach. I think that a 7.5 is a good score for it because it is quite in... Like, it's still... It holds up.
Yeah.
Which so many movies... For, especially aimed at youths.
Yeah. Don't. Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So, Lee, you do win, you son of a bitch, but
slightly.
Not by
just
much.
Slightly. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, we gotta start doing more, like, it. Garbo movies again. It's, they've been a lot of, like, real squeakers lately. It's been real close. Yeah,
it's true.
Yeah. All right.
Well... On that note, I guess your wish will not come true for
spoiler,
at least another week.
Yeah, I hear mine is a beloved. Next week I'm doing A Fish Called Wanda, which should be fun. I recognize the title.
Inscrutable title. Yeah, inscrutable.
I recognize it, but God, what am I going to do? I just don't know.
Yeah, we'll give you some actors and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, yeah. Right. You could just make a prequel to The Shape of Water.
Or just do Empire. I mean, fucking let it ride. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
That apparently works.
The John Leguizamo movie?
Yeah. Oh. No, the TV show.
You mean Romeo plus Juliet?
Yeah. Oh, if only. Oh, Baz Luhrmann does A Fish Called Wanda, yeah.
Yeah.
I got
one more thing to say.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, we can't bust heads like we used to, but we have our ways. One trick is to tell them stories that don't go anywhere. Like that time I got the ferry over to Shelbyville. I needed a new heel for my shoe, so I decided to go to Morganville, which is what they called Shelbyville in those days. So I tied an onion to my belt, which was the style at the time. Now, to take the ferry cost a nickel, and in those days, nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. Give me 5 bees for a quarter, you'd say. Now, where were we? Oh yeah, the important thing is that I had an onion on my belt, which was the style at the time. They didn't have those white onions because of the war. The only thing you could get was those big yellow ones. Anyway, I'm done.
I don't know. For sure the cut.
I want it to be so bad, but can we do that?
Seth says, and I'm done? Obviously, yes. Of course, yes.